Mexico's presidential race is rife with political fibs, rumors, and intrigue. But one thing's for sure, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, or AMLO, keeps rising in the polls. That's got many people asking, what about the undecided vote? Should we trust these polls at all? Will Morena, AMLO's party, and a new party at that become a major political force? This is Karin Zissis of ASCOA Online. I asked prominent pollster Jorge Buendía all these questions. Jorge is the director of Buendía y Laredo and a founding partner of Oraculus, which aggregates the polls and has become a top source for election data here in Mexico.
Yeah, I think that we are witnessing an electoral realignment in Mexico, a new party system.
We spoke in his Mexico City offices about why this vote, in which there are 60% more seats up for grabs than in the last general election, is likely to completely redraw Mexico's political landscape.
You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en Foco.
América Latina en Foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas, on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
First of all, thank you very much for speaking with me today.
No, it's a pleasure.
Great. So, just to sum up for everybody, this is the third time that Andrés Manuel López Obrador is running, and he's killing it in the polls. He's generally got a double-digit lead with 20 points over his next closest rival, Ricardo Anaya. And Oraculus, which aggregates the polls, has him at about 50% compared to Anaya's 27%. You also Oraculus is also giving AMLO a 94% chance of winning the presidency, right? So as he widens his lead over time, we're hearing a common refrain, don't trust the polls. People point to other elections like Brexit and the 2016 US vote, for example, or they cast doubt on Mexico's own track record with the polls. So let's start there. Why are people saying not to trust the polls, and to what degree are they right or wrong?
Okay, well, the people that are saying don't trust the polls are the ones who are supporting candidates who are in second or third place. So they just want to generate confusion regarding what's the meaning of the polling data. For instance, when they talk about Brexit, I mean, the difference between polling on the Brexit case and the actual result was within the margin of error of all the polls. Probably there was wishful thinking about the guys who were interpreting the polls saying that, oh, we are going to stay in the European Union, but it's actually within the margin of error. In the case of the US, it's the same story. The polling average predicted that Hillary Clinton would win the popular vote, which she actually did. What went wrong was the composition of the Electoral College, which is a different thing that polls, to some extent, are not responsible of the modeling that led people to believe that Hillary was going to win the Electoral College. And in the case of Mexico, people always talk, especially about 2012, when polls overrepresented Enrique Peña Nieto, and many polls said that he was going to win by 15, 18 percentage points, and he actually won by just 7 percentage points. But he did win. So if you think about Mexico, usually when the polls get it wrong, it's because they overestimate the support for the PRI. Mm-hmm. In the past previous election, for instance, in 2006, support for López Obrador was measured pretty well. Mm-hmm. He got what the polls were saying. In 2012, the polls were underestimating López Obrador. Mm-hmm. So for the polls to be missing what's going on in this election, it could mean that we are overestimating López Obrador, which hasn't happened in the past. Usually the errors in the polls had to do with overestimating support for the PRI. So, but I don't think that's an argument that PRI politicians are going to make, that we are overestimating support for Meade. So the advantage of López Obrador over the runner-up, Ricardo Anaya, 20, 23 percentage points, is huge. Even considering that we overestimate support for López Obrador and underestimate support for Anaya, let's say we have a 5 points error. Mm-hmm. You will close the gap by 10 percentage points and still López Obrador will have a comfortable lead. Mm-hmm. So I think that if we would expect a surprise in the Mexican election, we would need to see that the race is getting closer. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that we are not seeing. In order to forecast a closer race, we would need to see a different pattern, that is the runner-up growing while the first place keeps going down, mm-hmm. which is actually what we saw in 2006 and 2012. Mm-hmm. We are not seeing any trend to the benefit of either Anaya or Meade right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm. Right. You mentioned this, that the pre and the past was overestimated in the polls. The pre, for those of you listening, being the governing party in Mexico. Do you see that as being a possibility this time, and why would that be true or not?
No, I don't think that we are overestimating the PRI right now. Indeed, it is showing very weak levels or very minimal levels of support, something that we hadn't seen in the past. Mm-hmm. So it's not an issue. Indeed, if we are overestimating the PRI or underestimating it, would be a problem if we were overestimating by a huge margin López Obrador or underestimating Ricardo Anaya. But even in that case, the difference between those two is still large.
And if you look at the numbers, we're talking about somewhere between AMLO having somewhere between a 20 and 25% advantage, which is major. And if you look at Oraculus, you're putting the indecisos, the undecideds, at about 20%. So you put that, and you've got a margin of error, and maybe this is a lot closer than we think. What do you say to the people who aren't making the undecided?
The first thing is that the 20% on average, that is not saying whom are they going to support in the polls, they are not undecided in a literal sense, because we put a lot of people in that category. Actually, the correct term, it's item non-response, that people just did not answer that question or didn't say whom they were going to support. Mm-hmm. Because we have people there that say that, I'm not going to vote for anyone. I will not go to the polls on election day. The vote is secret. And just a small percentage, I would say about 7-8 percentage points of the whole sample, is actually people that are going, that it's really undecided, that do not have an opinion. Mm-hmm. On the candidates or on the parties, but that it's also the kind of people that usually do not go to vote on election day, mm-hmm. because they are people that are disinterested on political affairs. Indeed, that's one of the reasons why they don't have an opinion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that the impact of those people that say that they don't know which candidate they will support, it will be minimal at this stage. And we are not seeing any indication that these will be people that will vote overwhelmingly for one candidate different than López Obrador. Mm-hmm. So I think that the impact of this group will be, to some extent, minimal. It's not going to change the election.
Mm-hmm. So on that point, I mean, one thing, if you look at a lot of the polls, is that the current government, the current administration, has low approval, and a large portion of respondents to surveys say that they see the country going on a bad path, right? So part of what you're saying is that some of those people who might be seeing the country going on a bad path, they do have, there are some portion of these undefined voters who have an opinion, but they might not be saying their opinion for a candidate, or is it potentially that they are ambivalent about the candidates because they have a negative view on politics overall?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Because when you have anti-establishment people that say that they do not approve the president, that the country is going in the wrong direction, that they have a negative opinion about the PRI, the PAN, and Morena, this is people that it's alienated from the political system. Mm-hmm. And that makes it very difficult for them to turn out on election day.
And, you know, we're talking about undecideds, but you wrote an interesting column recently about keeping an eye on the decided voters. Can you talk about that? Why do we have to watch people who say they seem to have made up their mind?
Yes. Well, one thing is that when we talk about the undecided, we put all our efforts and attention in just 20% of the sample. Mm-hmm. And then we forget about 80% of the sample, and then they take we take for granted what they are saying, that they are going actually to vote for the candidate they say they would support. But theory, public opinion theory, but also the actual results of the survey show that people are ambivalent in regarding candidates and party. In many topics, there are some wedge issues mm-hmm. that have people torn between one candidate or the other. And we don't look at those people that are saying like, okay, I'm going to vote for López Obrador, but I'm a little bit afraid of him, of his mm-hmm. policies. I don't like his amnesty. Mm-hmm. Or I think Meade is a very good candidate, but I hate the PRI and I don't approve of the president. Mm-hmm. So if we take in a literal sense that they say, oh, I'm going to vote for Meade, but then you look at the other responses that this person gave us in the survey, mm-hmm. like disapproval of the president, wrong direction of the country, bad opinion of the PRI, this is an ambivalent respondent. Mm-hmm. And we have to keep an eye on them. Because actually in the past, when I was talking about overestimating the PRI, that's what we were looking at. All these contradictions between voters, we didn't pay any attention to it. And then on election day, it turns out that the race was closer. Mm-hmm. Or, for instance, the Reforma newspaper just published a poll in the state of Veracruz. It shows a tie for the governorship of Veracruz.
Between which parties?
Between the PAN, which is incumbent, or the Frente, which is incumbent, mm-hmm. and Morena, mm-hmm. which is the main opposition. Mm-hmm. It's just a 1-point difference. Mm-hmm. If you compare all the candidate traits, the PAN candidate has an advantage of 10, 15 percentage points over the Morena candidate. Mm-hmm. And which leads you to think that, okay, what's going on here is just the coattail effect of López Obrador, mm-hmm. that it's making Morena competitive. But then you look at the other data, and it seems that the PAN candidate has a more or less comfortable lead. Mm-hmm. So at least what we are seeing there, it's contradictory opinions that people say that they are going to vote for Morena, but think that the PAN candidate is a much better candidate than the Morena one. Mm-hmm. So you have to incorporate all these things in the analysis. And usually the problem is that we have a lot of ambivalent voters. When we ask, are you already convinced that you are going to support this candidate, we get responses that about only 50% of the respondents are already convinced. About one third say that, it's possible that I changed my mind. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we also know from the from past elections that about 15-20% of the voters decide whom they are going to support on the last week of the campaign or even on election day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they behave like the rest of the electorate. And I think that in this process, given the difference between first and second place, this will not matter in terms of who's going to win or who's going to be or who's going to lose, mm-hmm. but it may matter in terms of precision of the polls. No, like for instance, say we've seen several surveys that say that López Obrador has a support of over 50 percentage points. If you look more carefully at the data, it seems unlikely that he will get more than 50% of support, mm-hmm. but it's probably going to be between 45 and 50.
It's interesting everything you're saying, because in Mexico, in the last two elections, the winning candidate has not won more than 40% of the vote, right? We don't have runoff elections here in Mexico. And so when you start seeing these poll numbers of someone having over 50% support, you're also thinking, wow, that's something that's saying a lot in comparison to what we've seen. But as you've noted, that there's a good chance that that's being overestimated. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the parties, because you made reference to some of the different parties. We're also looking at a little bit, you can weigh in on what you think of this, but I feel as though we're looking at something a little bit different. We have a lot of coalitions this year. We have sort of a different setup. You've had this one dominant party, which was the PRI for years, obviously until they lost in 2000, but they still have been a dominant force. You had the PAN as a dominant party, and then you had the PRD, which has somewhat faded because AMLO left it. And we make reference to Morena, but Morena is a new party.
Ese día, Morena obtuvo su registro como partido político nacional.
Morena, el partido que México necesita, nuestro partido.
It came into being since the 2012 general elections. And many of these, I should say, many of these parties have been somewhat swallowed up into coalitions. You can see the PAN is the main force in the Frente, but they're with the PRD and C. Morena is the main force in its coalition, but they're with a right-leaning PES party. Now, so you're seeing some odd coalitions. So how does that affect polling, and how do you see that you're seeing some results in the polling that are reflecting a situation that's unique in some ways this time around?
Well, to some extent, it makes things easier when you have just three major candidates, and then measuring preference for them, I think it's easier. It's a little bit tricky because on the ballot paper, you have nine options plus the independent. Mm-hmm. So, and the names of each candidate is repeated three times because its name appears in each party that it's nominating him. The fact that there are also three major coalitions, there are four candidates, but actually they are just three.
Yeah, and just for anyone listening who isn't following as closely, El Bronco is an independent candidate.
That because of the Mexican regulation, the Mexican law, he receives very little official time in radio or TV. Mm-hmm. So he's not part of the debate.
He's literally part of the debates. He's
okay. He's literally part of the debates. But he's not present to some extent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because he doesn't get the media exposition that he would get with other kind of regulations.
And his poll numbers are reflecting it.
And his poll numbers are reflecting it. But the fact that you have three major candidates, just by chance, each candidate should receive 33% of the vote. But then when the PRI began to decline and get very low polling numbers, that means that López Obrador is going over its traditional electoral base, mm-hmm. which has been one of the big surprises. And it actually happened at the beginning of the year. We published a poll in January, and it was very clear that López Obrador had support in parts of the country where in the past two elections he didn't have support. The northern parts of the country, the Pacific, for instance, we divide the country in five electoral regions. In region number one, which is the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest of Mexico, López Obrador had lost in the past two elections by 20 percentage points, and he was tied at the beginning of the campaign. Right now, he's ahead in that area. Mm-hmm. So he's got support in regions and also social groups that in the past had not voted for him. Mm-hmm. But that has meant that the other parties have lost support. Mm-hmm. For instance, the PRI was the main check on López Obrador in the southern part of the country, mm-hmm. in 2006 and 2012. Mm-hmm. But the PRI went just south in those states, and now it's really, really in bad shape in those regions of the country. Mm-hmm. So that explains a lot why López Obrador has crossed the threshold of 40%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In 2012, we had a candidate, Peña Nieto, who went on to become president, who was very visible in the media. He married a soap opera star. Everybody called him telegenic for his looks. And so he had the face and name going for him. Some people have made the case that AMLO has name recognition going for him as well. How do you see that playing out in this race? Do you see that as being the case? Is there a chance that that could result in overestimating his support because people know who he is, so maybe they just pick him?
That's a very good point, because before the campaign started, he was known by almost all Mexican people, while the other candidates were not that well known. And actually, he started the campaign with about 35% of support in the polls in November. Mm-hmm. And then he began to gain support. Mm-hmm. So there is a part of the electorate that now says that it's going to vote for López Obrador, that knew about López Obrador and were not convinced about him, mm-hmm. that now say that they are going to vote for López Obrador. The most likely reason is the simplest one. They didn't like the other candidates. They were waiting to see what the other candidates were going to do, especially Ricardo Anaya. But at the beginning of the campaign, both López Obrador and Anaya were growing, and then came out these accusations of money laundering against Ricardo Anaya, and then his growing level of support just stopped, mm-hmm. no? And he's been stable for several months, indeed a slight decline in the past 1 or 2 months. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning, it was an advantage for López Obrador, but then people got to know the other candidates and they didn't like them either. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So probably now we are seeing the reverse of what happened in the past, that people are saying, better the devil we know than the good we don't. Mm-hmm. No, it would seem that nowadays we are seeing that people say, oh, better López Obrador than Meade, for mm-hmm. instance. Mm-hmm. Many people say that Meade could be a very good president, but people are not willing to give him a chance. Mm-hmm. And they are sticking with the candidate they have most information about. And that's also an explanation of why López Obrador has resisted the criticism made against him. Because I think that we all know, we have almost all the facts about López Obrador right now. He's been in 3 campaigns, we hear everything. Obviously the negative campaign about that Mexico will become a Venezuela or López Obrador as a Chavez does not resonate as it did in the past in 2006. Mm-hmm. Probably because the statu quo right now is in very bad shape and people actually is willing to take risks because they are dissatisfied with the statu quo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another thing that's particular and different about this election is just how many posts are up for grabs, just how many seats are open. This is the biggest election in Mexico's history.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. Well, there's a political reform that brought different races aligned. So now we're looking at over 3,400 seats up for grabs on both a local and federal level across the country. And I believe that's about a 60% increase in the number of seats.
Yeah, that's correct.
So what does it mean that there are so many seats up for grabs at once? How do you see that affecting the outcome?
Well, it's not going... Rather, it's the other way around. How the presidential election will affect the outcome of the other races.
We are ahead in the polls for the presidency, but we need a majority in Congress. That's why I ask respectfully that you vote for the Senate and deputy candidates in the coalition. Together, we'll make history.
And then, because having concurrent elections, will mean that Morena is going to do pretty well in many states. It's a new party with very few people being as part of the leadership of Morena, but they will fill a lot of positions. So Morena is going to become a major player at the state and at the county level in Mexico. And the question here is that then what are going to be the checks and balances on López Obrador? Because as we have these concurrent elections, the Cotel effect will mean that we only have to trust that voters divide their ballot, that they vote for López Obrador and they vote for a different party in order to have these checks and balances. But probably you've seen in the press that López Obrador is asking for vote Morena in all the races. Mm-hmm. If that happens, we are going to see a very powerful presidency because it's going to have a usual level of support in Congress, at least in comparison with previous presidents, but also at the state level and the county level. Mm-hmm. So this election may reshape the party system in Mexico. I think we are seeing the beginning of a new party system where most likely the PRD will disappear in the next few years. They currently hold 4 governorships. They are going to lose 3. They will keep Michoacán, which is not up for election, but probably when it does, they will lose it. And then the PRI is also going to be in a very weak position. And the fact that many elections are taking place right now means that that you will have to wait 2 or 3 years, or you will have to wait 3 more years to recover this post. Mm-hmm. No, because, and now it's 30 out of the 32 states that are going to have local elections. It's a huge number. So I think that unlike the past, in this election, we are going to see a lot of political power being decided. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be very good news for the party that carries the presidency because of the Cotel effect.
Mm-hmm. And one last point on that, it's very interesting thinking about this on that local and state level, because when we look at it and we discuss it, we tend to look at the president and we tend to look at Congress. So there's been a lot of chatter lately about Morena growing in Congress and being the largest party. It's not clear yet to what degree they'll have majority of this. We will see. But this local level is very interesting. I think a lot of people also don't realize that part of the reform has meant that there will be seats that are now available for re-election that weren't in the past. So we're looking at another dynamic there. And a lot of people have said that, you know, AMLO comes from the PRI, from the old school PRI. And Morena is going to build this strength. Do we look at Morena and start thinking, hey, we're looking at the new PRI now? What do you think of that?
I don't know if it is the new PRI, but that it will be, that Morena will be able to absorb a lot of priestas. Because put yourself in the position of a PRI local politician. They are going most likely to lose the presidency. or the federal government. They will have very few seats in Congress. In the local races, they don't have as many governors as they had in the past. And actually, most of the important governorships in Mexico are in the hands of the opposition. And in these local elections, they are going to lose a lot of posts. So there will not be many offices for a PRI politician to apply for. Mm. And on the other side, Morena will have a lot of jobs to offer. Mm-hmm. And then you will probably see the law of supply and demand mm-hmm. taking place, especially because in many states, we were talking about the northern part of Mexico, Morena didn't have a presence, not even the PRD. Mm-hmm. So there were not left-wing politicians that would support López Obrador. And what you have there is PRI politicians that probably are going to lose power, and they will probably say, well, Morena, it's a good option. Mm-hmm. And also we have another dynamic going on. Usually in these states in the northern part of the country, the main partisan cleavage was not between the PRI and the PRD or the PRI and Morena, was between the PRI and PAN. Mm-hmm. So you don't have these pre-existing animosities between PRI politicians and Morena. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to make also more likely that they are incorporated into a likely Morena government at the local level or federal level. Mm-hmm. Because the competition has been PRI and PAN in this three part of the country. Mm-hmm. So there you have these partisan cleavages that make very difficult for the PRI to join the PAN and the other way around. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't happen with Morena.
Great. So we're looking at the potential for some big changes, a big
yes.
redrawn.
No, I think that we are going to see, or we are already seeing, an electoral realignment. Mm-hmm. And it is unclear to what extent the PRI will be able to survive 6 years from now. Mm-hmm. Because polling numbers show that people are very negative about the PRI brand. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's not very clear how strong the PRI might be 6 years from now. So we are witnessing major electoral changes, a new party system where most likely the opposition to Morena will be the PAN. We don't know who will be in charge of the PAN, but we are witnessing a major electoral change right now.
Great. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
It's a pleasure.
Great. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Karin Zissas. This episode was produced by Luisa Lemmy. If you're interested in learning more about what's at stake in Mexico's elections, go to www.as-coa.org/mxelex. Check the podcast description for other helpful links. The music in this episode was recorded at America Society in New York City. Find out about upcoming concerts at musicoftheamericas.org. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If so, subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, or Stitcher.